I'm Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's about time for true crime. Hey.
Hey.
How are you?
So good. You guys.
You guys.
We are recording this on a Friday evening. Uh-huh. Let me set the tone. We are in our fat pants.
Mm-hmm.
There is a candle.
As there should be.
It has been dark for hours.
Womp womp.
Like since lunchtime.
Womp womp.
Because this is New England in November. We are so slap happy. We just spent the last probably 30 minutes watching stupid reels. And we're like, oh shit, we should probably
crying,
do this.
Laughing.
So we are in a slap happy kind of goofy crazy mood.
It's true. We have like 10 pages of research to get through today.
I'm so excited for this.
I'm so excited.
I also wanted to say, by the way, thank you to all of you who were hanging out with us last week on Instagram.
Yes, so cute.
We were together bebopping around the city.
We were.
As a couple of independent ladies do. And we posted a few questions and the feedback we got, y'all.
Snaps for you.
Abby, now owes me a Coke. So anyway, that was so much fun. Thank you. If you ever reach out to us on Instagram, you're dealing with me.
Yeah.
So, hey, hello.
Unless we're together, and then I'll also add things.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
But anyway, that was just a lot of fun. So we'll try to do that more. We got so many messages. Like, we posted a picture of us at one of the museums that we were at, and what did someone message us? She was like, it's like seeing book characters for the first time. Anyway, it was awfully sweet.
Although you didn't put my response, which was, hope that's a good thing.
But anyway, that was really cool.
It was fun.
We had a lot of fun. And we'll definitely do that more. We love our pod pets. I spent way too long just gushing over them the other day. So keep sending them. Keep just being you guys. And
we
and
love them.
All of it. We just love you.
If your pod pets of any kind are doing anything cute and like holiday-y, send them in. Maybe we can make like a holiday pod pets post. That'd be fun.
Don't threaten me with a good time. Are you kidding me?
Oh, I will. Behind school, 2 p.m. No, I'm kidding.
Well, cute little like mistletoe. Can they get all the little forehead kisses?
And the little elf hats.
Yeah, with a little
and
boots.
And trying to steal Christmas cookies?
Not the boots.
Or getting scary close to the menorah? Cute. I mean, not cute. I mean, scary, but like cute.
And the boots.
Yeah, the boots.
The cute little boots.
But I have a feeling we're going to be a bit tangential this episode. So I'm going to try to hop into it like.
No, that's right about right now. Sounds fantastic.
Okay. Hi. Hello. How
are you? Hi.
A yoo-hoo. Pod's on. Don't skip.
Stop it.
Okay. Are you ready? Are you actually ready, though?
I was born ready. No, I'm really ready to get back into this because but my mind has been going off.
Are you?
No, I am.
Okay, well, hi.
Hey.
Hello. Howdy. Welcome or welcome back. Hopefully, a welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast. About time for true crime.
You guys.
And I only say hopefully welcome back because it's part three, baby.
I know.
If you haven't listened to one and two, do that now. We'll wait. Oh, my God. Wild, right? So, today... We're going to keep talking about Teal Swan and the Teal Tribe. It should be our second to last episode in this series, but like the other elements of the series, we're going to start with a quick disclaimer that anything and everything in this episode is nothing more than research produced by journalism, documentaries, news articles, op-eds, and other reputable sources, and the opinions of how the hosts of this podcast interpret said research and sources as a whole. This is not in any way meant to demean or malign any individual, group, religion, spirituality, business, organization, or any elements that we speak of in these episodes. And once again, in the words of Sarah and Nippy, anyone or anything. So let's get into it.
Or really, from here on, allegedly.
All allegedly. A big, fat, capital, alleged in everything I say. Just like, okay... Right now, I'm putting quotes around everything in the script, and I'm just going to put allegedly right in front of it, like, you know, like a multiplication joke, you know, like how it's like on every word. But yep. Anyway, allegedly, that would have been funny.
Mm.
So, does that cancel out? Oh, shit. Anyway, naturally, this also leads us into our trigger warnings. There needs to be a gigantic, huge, flashing red light, slappy in the face kind of trigger warning for this series. We're talking about potential cults, psychology, childhood abuse, sexual abuse, suicide, coercive control, narcissism, and even torture in this series.
That's it?
I wish I could give you a warning every time one pops up, and I'll do my best anytime I can, but it is so ubiquitous in this series, I simply would be warning you once again every word, similar to our allegedly. So maybe it's trigger warning and allegedly towards all of the words, you know? But please proceed with caution and feel free to skip this or take it in chunks. It is not for the faint of heart. As always, we have sources and resources linked below, so check out anything. You have access to everything that I do.
Perfect.
So let's get into it. We're going to do a quick recap. So for those of you who need a little refresh, hopefully you didn't miss it. Our first episode in the series, we talked about Teal Swan, who she is, what she claimed to offer, and dove deep into some of the psychology and trauma in the brain to understand last week's part, which revealed Teal's childhood, growing up, and what she is currently doing with her retreats, and how that has turned her into the guru she is today, and also led her haters to call her the suicide catalyst from the death of one of her first followers, Leslie, and even a few that have been connected to her now shut down Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we're going to talk about the cult allegations and why what's happening is concerning. We talked about so much setup, but today is what I'm really intrigued by. And it's still the tip of the iceberg, it feels like. I don't know how to put into words everything that's happened. I literally was watching one of the episodes from the Deep End docuseries, and I had to write in a different page. I forgot about the fucking frog poison.
I'm sorry, what?
That's part of this. Like, there's always something that I'm like, I fucking forgot about that. Like, there's just so much.
That's so bad.
And we've already had, we've already had like 16 pages of research.
I know.
Anyway, okay. So today, that's what we're getting into. I still feel like I can't tell you 100% yes or no on the cult allegations today, but we're going to get into a little more of it. And also, I have a big old corrections corner. Big old corrections corner from last episode. Oh. Blake is not the father of Teal's child, Winter, but he did primarily help raise Winter.
So he was the
dad that stepped up.
Not the stepdad.
Right.
Yeah.
But just so we know, I don't want that to be misled or anything.
Okay.
So that was a different ex-husband named Mark. That was the father, but just so you know, I was wrong. And that's right.
All right.
Okay. So let's keep going. We talked about Teal's early followers and the current programming she offers, like her retreats, events, books, and videos. Teal is an incredibly talented influencer online, and she has used like search engine algorithms to her benefit, like we talked about last week. The concern with Teal, though, is this issue of talking through some really concerning, potentially unethical practices on people that come to her events and retreats. But most importantly, it's concerning that the people that are going to her are people that have found her through the online sphere, be it Instagram, YouTube, Spotify, whatever, and nothing she's doing seems to be encouraged by psychologists for people with acute suicidality.
Mm.
Meaning, like, not acute as in, like, oh, adorable, or, like, teeny tiny, but, like, it's present, we're just not actively in crisis and suicidal in this moment. Acute suicidality.
But it isn't that these psychologists are like, in your meantime, as part of your coping, I'd really encourage you to watch some of her videos and see what you can learn. Like, that's not exactly happening either.
And for her completion process, which we'll talk about in just a minute here, it's specifically not recommended for people with acute suicidality.
Which is really the population she targets.
Correct. Or at least a lot of the people that are willing to spend thousands of dollars to come on a retreat.
Well, it seems like it's her target audience, though. Mm-hmm. If she's got all of these things related to these keywords that people are going to look up, kind of easy to connect the dots.
Exactly. And her search algorithm hacks have, like, landed her a lot of people who are in really bad ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, seemingly, everyone close in her sphere is just, like, very mentally unwell. And I don't know if that's purposeful or if that's the result of what she's cultivated, hoping it will help.
Mm.
But let's get into the fascinating parts of this case, because today's information is primarily from the Deep End documentary, which I highly recommend. This is because much of that documentary explores the cult-like practices and goes through the private investigation on the group, and you can see that process and a lot of what's going on. I cannot tell you enough. Like, if you can spend some extra time on this, watch that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so fascinating. This and the Mormon Stories podcast are like the two biggest sources that I found incredibly helpful and just really information heavy. But today, let's explore some more of that. So Teal, as we discussed, holds all sorts of events and retreats. According to the Costa Rica Star newspaper, her retreats take place on her own land and retreat space in Puerto Rico. She allows people to sign up for a 6-day retreat that costs $4,200 in a shared room.
Ooh.
Or $5,000 for a single.
At that point, just pay the extra $800.
Right, it's a drop in the bucket. They serve vegan or vegetarian meals, and the event will take place at a Filia Center in Atenas, Alajuela, Costa Rica. I don't know. Please don't yell at me for butchering that. I know it was wrong somehow. But this was a place that was created by Teal Swan herself and her husband, Ael, with the vision of building a retreat where people could awaken, heal, and come alive in an atmosphere that is centered on human connection. And according to dailymail.co.uk, she believes she's an alien destined for world domination, says she can enter people's brainstems, and claims Hitler was the greatest contributor to world peace.
I'm sorry, what?
I'm the messenger, man.
All right. Go ahead. Carry on.
I don't know the aliens' beliefs on Hitler. I can tell you my beliefs do not align.
We do not agree.
I don't think I'd be welcomed in the UFO if that's the vibe as a whole.
Yes.
But Teal truly believes in her mission to spread what she thinks to as many people as possible. She tells her followers that her mission is bigger than all of them and they have to be willing to do whatever it takes for the cause.
Mm-hmm.
According to the information on her website, this is a quote, "In this extraordinary workshop, you will be going into it completely blind, and so will she." As an extrasensory, Teal Swan, the internationally recognized spiritual leader, will show up completely unprepared. She will observe the group, and based on her observations, she will custom design the workshop to the specific attendees that stand before her. A curveball is something that is unexpected, surprising, and disruptive. We call this workshop the curveball because those of us who know Teal know that she loves to throw curveballs. It is a guarantee that by attending this workshop, you will enter the unexpected, you will be surprised, and the patterns that are holding you back will be disrupted. And if that's where we're starting,
wow,
it's going to get kooky.
If I had $5,000 burning a hole in my pocket, though.
For funsies?
6 days? I gotta know.
I want to know what the vegan food is. That shit better be good.
Yeah, I'm going to go vegetarian food, but
I'm just saying, if those are the only two options, get me a gourmet vegan platter, okay?
Man, I want to go to that workshop, though.
We could
I gotta
both
know.
Save $800, though. We could bunk together.
If we get to choose, it's probably going to be like, oh, let's make you uncomfortable.
Bunky.
To go with somebody else. You don't know.
I'll bite them. Try me.
I'm going to count you off. 1, 2, 3. Now all the ones over here be like, fuck.
So
anyway,
in the documentary The Deep End, it follows Teal and the Teal tribe through her journey and current retreats. This includes Blake, his wife Juliana, and a few other close followers with snippets of how she does her retreats. I think it's important to remember that it's all clips of her retreats, so we might be missing some context, but I've tried to find some that make sense, and I've struggled before because there are some things that concern me, and I don't know that more context would necessarily help. It might. I'm all for more info. But I don't know that it's info that's going to make me feel better about what's happening.
Yeah. You know?
First, I want to describe kind of what's going on through Teal's words. I became concerned with a few aspects of the completion process, which we briefly spoke about earlier. Teal describes this in a few stages, and I'm taking all of this from an interview clip with the Align podcast where she walks it through in like a very brief version. It's like a 5-minute interview clip. But the first step is working directly with the trigger. Instead of trying to get rid of a trigger, we are amplifying the trigger to use it as a doorway to whatever is unresolved. The first is an emotional process to turn your feelings onto the somatic experience. Use your somatic process to go back in time to link to the memory that created the trauma. The memory naturally arises as a result of that trigger and feeling. Once you get the memory, you're re-experiencing it, and then you need to accept that it happened, not to approve it. The body relaxes around this experience, so the next phase is to bring an active resolution to it where we alter the memory. She says you bring whatever needs you have to the situation, and then you visualize yourself having or doing what you needed in that moment. And then you'd move to a safe space, create distance between what happened and what is. So basically, she's going to trigger you mm-hmm. and overstimulate you until you can feel it in your body. And then the feeling and the trigger should bring up ideas of a memory that she'll then help you try to like visualize a different ending to. And then she'll help you get space.
As if that overrides the existing actual memory?
Perhaps.
Like you're just saving it over it? You're replacing the file?
I don't think that she's describing it that way, but I think that is what's happening to people, if that makes sense.
Because it sounds like it's like, okay, let me really make you panic.
Yeah.
Remembering something very traumatic. Use that as a gateway to something deeper.
Right.
Once you think you've harnessed that, we're going to talk about it as if we're living it now.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to override that memory and say, instead, how should this have ended? Or how would we have liked this to go?
How could this have gone? And then, okay, let's bring you back to the present. So all of that's the completion process. But we'll get into more of the red flags on that later. But what's concerning to me is that Teal quote-unquote like certifies people to do the completion process with others.
Okay.
And from the Gateway podcast, they do seem to do this with individuals as well. But in the deep end, it looks like this group dynamic where one person has others role play. And it should be noted, it is not clear if everyone in the role play is certified to do the completion process. Or if like one person is and the other people are volunteers, maybe from the group of the retreat. It's very confusing. So there's obviously one person that is like
facilitating it.
Yes, there's one person facilitating and there's one person whose memory it is, who's like obviously going through it.
Right.
And then there are other people there involved. And the other people there, I don't know if they're certified in the process or if they're other group attendees.
Gotcha.
Was not described at all. But the guy who leads it, who is very obviously a quote unquote certified person in this process, will ask all of the individuals questions like, do you agree with your free will to assume the consciousness of the part of me that is a child?
What did you just call me?
You heard. And it's like they have to repeat it back. So like, I agree with my full consciousness and free will or whatever. Like,
oh, my God.
So it's interesting. So we're going to go through, it's like almost, it might be the actual opening scene for episode 3 in this docuseries. And it's this person named Elliot. I'm not going to assume gender, so I'm just going to say Elliot. But the guy leading this is asking people like, you know, ask them to be the part of you that was a child. This person is going to be your mom. This person is going to be your dad. And Elliot is like watching,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. So someone asks one of the extra people in this group, like, will you be the consciousness of Elliot's mother at the time of the memory? Someone else asks, will you be their father at the time of the memory? Like, it's all very situational to this.
Mm-hmm.
And now, the person whose memory it is, Elliot, doesn't seem like they're involved at all. Like, they're kind of watching. They're not the version of themselves as a child. Someone else is.
Okay.
So that was very interesting to me. But for this, I'm going to assume that Elliot or whoever would be in the observer's spot here must have spoken through some of the conflict or issues they remember and have other people role play it. Because otherwise, I don't know how they'd have this information.
Yeah.
And if they don't, I mean, help. Maybe Teal's got some powers. But
that is,
I would assume, okay, there's got to be some kind of walkthrough before they just start role playing.
Right.
So the certified helper, I'm not sure their official name, asks Elliot if they relate to the role play. And Elliot says something like, I'm not recognizing. Which is interesting.
It's a weird sentence.
It is. The role play continues and Elliot keeps watching this. And one of the other group members that's playing Elliot's dad says something along the lines of, he can take his aggression out on Elliot. And Elliot sighs and just is like, wow, while processing. And then the clip jumps to them in a group. And Elliot saying they remembered their dad being mean, but nothing more than that. But the person who was literally role-playing as their dad said they thought while they were, you know, role-playing that, that, you know, they suspected maybe there was some abuse.
Okay.
And Elliot and this person are kind of going back and forth and just like processing. And they were like, yeah, but I felt that maybe that had happened on the son. So Elliot's brother, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
And then the person that was in the mom's role play was like, yeah, I felt some inappropriate touches might have happened between the son and the mom as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Elliot just is kind of like, I assume in shock, but just, oh, wow. Like, okay. Okay. Wow. And later, during the step that I can only assume would be like getting comfortable with the trigger to start adding in what you need.
Mm-hmm.
They talk some more. And I'm going to say, I assume it's that because they're outside. So it's like a change of location, but it didn't really feel like a safe place because they're still actively talking about the traumatic memory.
Yeah, so we're not quite at part three yet.
Right. We're not quite like separating and creating a safe space. Ideally, if this is the version of separating and creating a safe place, I don't agree with that aligning. So I'm going to assume for the benefit of the doubt.
Part two.
That this is part two. But they're outside and they're in this group and Elliot is very clearly struggling. They're like rocking a little bit while they sit and kind of through tears is like, I don't want to see my parents as evil. Which like, maybe this is me and a poor understanding of the English language, but I would say that that means they probably didn't go into it seeing their parents as evil.
Mm-hmm.
Just personally. And the main guy who's leading the completion process says, these are all things we can look at.
Oh, what a fucking joke.
Helpful. Thank you. Very helpful. And we'll circle back to this in our round table, but some of this is just really concerning. First, Teal is not a licensed therapist and is not qualified to do trauma work with people. More so, she is certainly not qualified to then teach other people how to do this. And I understand it was a process that she came up with and on face value actually seems like it might have some weight behind it. But without going through a process to become a psychologist or to work with trauma and not knowing all of the complexities and just knowing the basic barest bones version of what's going on, you don't know the harm that's there or that you could potentially cause.
Well, not only that, but like this reminds me of EMDR in that you bring someone through a trauma response
mm-hmm.
and then you try to desensitize them to the trigger. So like if somebody experienced something very traumatic, they'd kind of like walk you through it and you'd kind of put them back into mm-hmm. that situation. And then you'd have to try to become safe in that and be like, it can't hurt me anymore or it can't right. bother me or I don't need to be scared or whatever it is, and you're kind of rewiring it that way, but that depends on the premise that the person acknowledges what did happen.
Yep.
The facts of that, and are not trying to say certain things didn't happen that did happen. It's just accepting what happened.
Right.
And trying to bring down the physical and mental responses to that stimuli. Not saying, we're going to put you through it again, but this time, take your pen and just decide new facts.
Right.
As well, to what happened. Like that is not that we're just going to pretend we can create things now like that. Okay. All right.
Well, it's really interesting because it's almost like a mixture of EMDR and visualization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing that actual therapists who have been trained in how to do it will help people go through and say, okay, let's visualize a different ending. But they're not trying to put you back into that heightened state.
or to say like, oh, this is your new reality now.
Right. And I don't think, to play devil's advocate, I don't think if you asked Teal that she would say that's the goal of this. But I think with what we talked about with trauma and memory, it's a very real potential. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it's happening. Her process, I don't know. It just seems really like you're triggering someone to the point that they might experience intrusive thoughts and then accept that as their reality.
Mm.
I don't know. But first, this is memory play. Regardless of our trauma, regardless of our symptoms, whether or not the people role-playing are psychic and know exactly what happened, this is playing with someone's memory, especially the traumatic ones, where people tend to go when they're triggered in general. Like, I don't know, getting a cup of coffee isn't triggering for me, but I've never had trauma around getting a cup of coffee. So mm-hmm. usually if you're triggered, there's some kind of trauma involved. And we talked about how that can disrupt our memory storage in our brain. So playing with our memory by opening it, re-experiencing it, and then reimagining it, and then having outside input, and then having other people validate that outside input is really playing with fire in those sort of like quote unquote off sections of your memory recollection. And it's just a huge fucking ethical concern because we don't know anything about this. There's been no tests. There's no correlations. We don't know anything. And yet so many people walk away from her with abuse they did not remember before.
And kind of similar abuse? Like, isn't it usually sexual abuse as a child?
There seems to be a lot of that. And I'm not saying 100% this didn't work on or help some people, but I'm saying 100% it is not foolproof and it's playing with fire, especially for people who already have mm-hmm. significant trauma. And another part I want to highlight here is that, in my armchair psychologist opinion, that this could just be further hurting people's mental health. The DSM-5 is a fascinating tool for diagnosing mental health. And once again, I'm all armchair. I'm no certification, okay? I can't use the DSM-5 on people. I can't diagnose. That's not what any of this is. But it is to say, I'm a fucking weirdo and I love to read it. I also think it's fascinating the philosophy behind what's normal, what's abnormal, who decides and how. And I find it fascinating that I read it a lot. But of course, again, can't diagnose, don't have the certification to use it on or with people. So this is all just my interpretation. But diagnoses are a long and grueling challenge for most people because it takes unraveling and finding the roots behind what's going on. It's not just like, oh, you keep getting these thoughts of like something awful happening. Okay, well, is that a memory? Is that re-experiencing trauma? Is it intrusive thoughts? Is it like a phobia?
Anxiety, thinking that something's going to happen, not that it already did.
Right, exactly. There's so many different reasons. So it should never be like you go in somewhere for 45 minutes and they walk out saying, yep, this is what you got. Stamp of approval. And it's so long because at the end of it, every single diagnosis has something along the lines of this can only be diagnosed if these issues and symptoms are not better described by a different diagnosis.
Right.
And so symptoms are also measured in intensity, frequency, and length of time they've occurred, and overall whether or not they impact your daily living. Because if I'm anxious, but it's normal, like, I don't know, if I have rent due and taxes due and all of my final exams are on the same day and I don't have a job or time to study, that's normal anxiety. That's not clinically disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can't go to class because I'm afraid that the test in 3 months is going to be undoable, that's disrupting my day-to-day life.
Right.
So I'd venture to say if someone like Elliot was struggling but had an okay relationship with their family coming to this retreat, and then being ripped away from the support they had might further disrupt their daily living.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe now you don't have your support system that'll tell you. And hey, maybe that relationship wasn't good. But just as an example, this could be more harmful than helpful, even in the best of intentions.
Well, it could have been that the parents were the only supportive people in Elliot's life. And now Elliot's been told, okay, yep, they suck. So now it's like, do I or don't I trust them? Because I trusted this thing enough to come here and spend $5,000 for you to tell me about it.
Right.
So I feel like I should walk away with that with a little bit more certainty. And now I don't know if I can even trust the people I thought were the only ones I could.
Right. And that's not even getting into the sunken cost fallacy.
Yeah.
Which if you're spending $5,000 for someone to tell you that, you're going to usually freaking believe them because you're like, I paid $5,000 for this advice.
Mm-hmm.
But in that way, if we go off of the DSM-5 approach, this could actually technically be making someone sicker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just too up in the air. And I don't know. But in this sense, it just seems like people are becoming even further isolated and start to develop trust issues with previous support groups on top of having to deal with whatever these recovered or reimagined memories are. And when we're talking about her childhood, Teal herself says, sometimes you have to accept the fact that my own family is my enemy.
That's going to be hard for them to hear.
Yeah. I have a lot of feelings on that, but, mm-hmm. you know, it's not about my feelings, I guess. So I also want to note here that, of course, we are not saying familial abuse isn't real, isn't experienced, isn't a problem, or that because someone has related DNA to you that you are obligated to think highly or well of them, or even that you need to keep a relationship. Just that if it's not the case, it's genuinely hurting and isolating people to encourage this. And not for nothing, I understand that parents are flawed. Nobody is perfect, and to raise a kid well, most parents have to be very on and very intentional and understand their own blind spots and trauma, and that's a lot to ask of anyone for every day of 18 plus years while you grow, are raised, and figure it out. She says, she being Teal, says it's easier to forgive quote-unquote him, who I assume she means as her abuser, than her parents sometimes. And listen, I know emotions aren't math and they aren't mutually exclusive to factor the narrative, and I understand that, but they didn't hurt her. They didn't feed her into the mouth of the beast, and they tried to help. They took her to therapy, they encouraged her to do activities she liked and hang out with Diana, or riding horses, or dance, or gymnastics. Listen, I don't know. She's in a leotard dancing or like performing a lot as a kid, so like it's one of those. Mm-hmm. I don't know which one. But yeah, maybe they missed an offender in the community, but they did not actively encourage the abuse, let alone know of it. And then they took her to a specialist when they were like, something's going on. Granted, that specialist wasn't special for the right reasons, but like they did their best. And my parents aren't perfect. Nobody's are, but my parents love me and want me to be my best, healthy, and happy. And I know not everybody can say that, and I feel very lucky, but regardless of any of their roles in my childhood or trauma, I can't be an empathetic person and see them as real people and still withhold forgiveness for things that weren't their fault, in their control, or the days that they weren't saints. Because they're just people. And I think it's a lot to expect that out of people for every single day that you were a dependent child. 365 days a year for 18 plus years.
That's gotta be like a dagger to the heart for them to listen to, though.
It is. And I'm so sorry for her parents because they literally did everything they could. And yes, I think something happened to Teal. I just don't think it's what she believes it was.
And that maybe her parents aren't to blame for that in the way that she's, I don't know.
And even if it was what she thinks it was, they weren't to blame for it because they didn't know and they didn't do it.
Well, right. But if they were aware of it and they didn't, you know what I mean? Like if there's any truth to that, I can see that, but doesn't seem like it.
No. She even says they didn't see it.
Okay, so like, well then, ma'am.
Yeah. So I'm like, you fucking give your parents a hug. Damn it. Like,
jeez.
And I want to make it really very abundantly clear that I am not mitigating Teal's pain. I think she is in a lot of pain. And I think she really means well and genuinely wants to help people and probably get some praise and money for it too. But that doesn't cancel out, nor is it mutually exclusive from not being able to harm other people in the name of mental health care. It damages not only the reputation of the field that can actually help in a repeatable, systemically shown way, but it damages people's lives. And I know hurt people, but somewhere you have to take note of what you're doing or everyone just hurts each other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's intentional, but when the damage is done, it's done, and the intention doesn't really matter. Elliot's story is definitely their own, but Grassi is another woman in the Deep End documentary that shares their abuse. This included, trigger warning here, but it included rape and sexual abuse, but also seeing other children be burned on grills.
Very similar to our friend Teal's story.
Yep. Very, very familiar. And she says, when I started this whole thing with Teal, I feel like my childhood just started to come up. And so she talks about these family parties where they'd light barbecue pits and put the kids on top of it, use rape as punishment for taking cake at 4 years old, and others, as she mentions, there's a lot. Grassi says she doesn't know why or remember all of it, but that she, quote unquote, did start uncovering some of this stuff with Teal, but I had stuff I didn't need to uncover. And that's what sucks. I don't even know whether to hope that what she's remembered with Teal is true or not, because regardless, it's her perception now.
And it's very painful.
It is. And if it's true, she had a fucking horrendous childhood. And I'm sure it wasn't glamorous based on her statements and that she had things she didn't have to uncover. You know what I mean? But if it's not true, then she already has horrendous memories. And now Teal has added in torture and maybe other elements. And there are pieces of these stories that just pop up way too often and dramatically, in my opinion, to be happening all around without anyone catching on, except for the Emperor's New Clothes trauma expert on what your brain won't tell you that she can.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to be graphic, and a trigger warning here for my description, but you're telling me that in any neighborhood that neighbors wouldn't recognize the smell of burning flesh and multiple screaming children on regular family parties whenever they needed to punish the kids? That these kids would be able to heal without medical attention, maybe even skin grafts, if they lived through being fried on a barbecue pit, or that teachers or daycares or neighbors or friends wouldn't notice marks or, at worst, missing kids.
Yeah.
It's just too much willful negligence on too many people's parts in my head for this to make sense for everyone who comes away from her saying these things.
Yeah, either there was something going on right there, which doesn't seem likely, or maybe these memories aren't real.
Right. And I believe that Grassi is going through this, and that's the worst part. Regardless of what happened in the timeline of real life, she has this pain, she has this trauma, and now she has no escape. Grassi even tried to confront her mom, who denied everything. Grassi has memories of her mom walking away after seeing her get raped.
Oh.
If this didn't happen, I can assume Grassi feels so hurt that she can't have a relationship with someone who won't acknowledge it. And I can assume her mother is probably so hurt that her daughter thinks that. And if it is true, Grassi has every right. But that's always the way with Teal in the end. It's what do you believe? Because now we're saying this happened regardless of whether or not you believe it. So do you believe it's real or not? And if you hold the pain, I don't see where you're going to say, I don't believe this is true, because you're feeling that pain.
Mm-hmm.
I also just want to say, Teal says Grassi and Blake's family both blame her for their isolation.
Uh-huh.
She's like, they blame me because it's harder to believe that you could be part of the reason your kid doesn't want to talk to you. Part of that big T trauma is the ability to do something to help with your situation. We talked about that in the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
So while theoretically the completion process should help that by re-experiencing your trauma and then visualizing yourself having whatever you needed to get out of it and therefore giving the feeling of power or control over your rescue or recovery, it should help. It should also be noted, though, that visualization of a different ending or different action is something that certified licensed therapists do. But in the field of psychology, they don't overstimulate someone into a trigger, shut down the client's logical brain, and then have them try to do something or go further into that. You cannot heal when you're dysregulated, and you cannot dysregulate your way into regulation to heal.
Yeah. You yeah.
In Western psychology and therapy, the goal is to process the pain and the feelings and to feel them and honor them when they come, but then cope in a healthy way so it has less control over you.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually hurts less. But the issue here is that by re-experiencing this, you then open that memory and, like Allie was just saying, re-encode this memory each time with the filled in gaps from this process that other people are externally validating. And again, I still don't fucking know if the other people are certified in the process at all. And if they are, I don't even know what that fucking means.
Yeah, I mean, what weight are we giving certification here?
Right. And then since you have this trauma that didn't happen, there's now literally nothing they can do about their recovery or rescue. There's nothing they can do to escape it. So it's just like, hey, you know how you have really bad trauma?
Mm-hmm.
What if we gave you more? And then there was literally nothing you can do to get better.
But you can keep spending $5,000 to come to my week-long retreat so that maybe you can make progress
mm-hmm.
if you're worthy.
If you do it right. And if our control over our rescue or recovery is a defining feature of Big T trauma, Teal has now customized a way of implanting new trauma and making it unrecoverable. You cannot get closure from a parent that sexually abused you if they did not, in fact, sexually abuse you. There's no conversation to be had. There's no test to prove. You just now have to cope with that pain. And these people now have to live with the trauma they came in with and the trauma that Teal caused forever. And not for nothing. But here at ATFTC, we have a little pattern of following the money.
Mm-hmm.
And like you just said, unrecoverable trauma seems like a really great way for job security for someone who specializes in dealing with people who have significant trauma.
Sounds like Barbara Snow.
Listen, I'm not saying that's what's happening. I'm just saying.
It sounds like the world's worst fucking pyramid scheme.
Yeah, right? And then you tell two friends and they get two traumas and they get two traumas. Everybody look under your chairs.
And
it's
you.
Trauma day.
You get a trauma. This is really bad.
Yeah.
Because it started with one person, seemingly.
Seemingly.
In this little pod of people. And look how exponentially it grew.
Exactly.
Because it took one person with a camera and good looks and an articulate way to describe very abstract things.
Yep. She's got the gift of gab and she's got pretty eyes. And damn it, she knows how to use a hashtag. I want to switch slightly to another concerning element of this documentary, which is Blake and Juliana. If you remember Blake, we talked about him being in Teal's life as sort of like a partner in crime, for lack of a better word. To be more realistic, it's probably more like Batman and Robin, and you know Teal would never play Robin.
Yeah, he's okay. The one that was there for like, I don't know, 20 years. They were long broken up, but they stayed together for her son, even though the son wasn't biologically his. But I mean, by all means, he was his dad, so he was sticking around.
It seems that way, or they just like love each other, but they've loved each other through like multiple marriages on Teal's end, multiple partners, I believe on both of their ends. Like,
fascinating.
Very interesting. And they lived together through all of this. It wasn't just like, we're going to stay as friends close. Like, they lived in the same home.
Okay, but to be there on Thanksgiving.
To lie on that wall.
Like, come on. Like, honey, can you pass the mashed potatoes? And like 10 people ready for it.
Yes, love. And it's like a choir.
Seriously. Oh, no.
So during the time The Deep End came out, that was in 2022. But Blake had lived with Teal at that time for 19 years.
That's a long time.
He had helped raise Winter. And as said earlier, I was wrong about him being the biological father, but he did help raise him. And at one point, oh, my God, it's like kind of funny. Molly is the private investigator that like looks into whether or not this is a cult. And she does multiple interviews with different people on the outer skirts of Teal tribe, nation, all of that. Mm-hmm. And like the inner circle and with Teal and all of these things. And so Juliana is Blake's wife. And I believe they've been like dating long distance for a long time.
Dude, to get her drunk and be like, so what do you think about Teal?
Oh, you'd probably get a lot out of her. Mm-hmm. I think she's German.
Yes.
She's got to be from around that area in Europe, at least. And so she comes over. It's obviously like a big culture shock. And a lot of this documentary actually kind of follows her because she comes in. They like are FaceTiming and then she comes in and they get married like 3 weeks after she comes in. And Blake has made it known. It's like a big deal. You have to get along with Teal. If you can't get along with Teal and like the family of people that are the inner circle, basically, this isn't going to work. So like, it's not me, it's me and us. And she took that. She said, okay. And she came and she was like, I feel a little weird about Teal, but like, I think it's all good. And then Teal didn't like her at first. And at first Teal is like, kind of territorial almost.
Yeah, she's going to take her babysitter.
Yeah, she's like, he comes running anytime I need him. Like, it needs to be very clear that I come before you in his priorities.
The balls of that. Could you imagine if a woman said that to me? Ooh, girl. Ooh. I mean, I wouldn't entertain anything with a guy who would even ask that.
Right.
But.
But it's still at the point where it's unicorns shitting rainbows. And Juliana's like, okay. Like, I'm willing to work with you. I'm not going to, like, let you walk all over me, but I'm willing to work with you because I like him. I love him. I want to make that work.
Mm.
And so they try to get a little bit closer, and it feels almost very calculated where Teal doesn't trust her at first. She has like this whole stink with Blake in one scene where she's like, that's dangerous. You don't know. You can't just let anyone around me because then they can leave and say whatever. And because they were close to me, people are going to believe it. And it's like, kind of, yeah, actually, I believe people who have one-on-one experiences with other people. Generally speaking, that's memory. But she doesn't know a lot about that, so we can let that slide. So she's freaking out. And then she comes around to Juliana.
And then she's at like, some actually, point, you can be useful to me.
She wants to, like, force someone into getting help. Like, I think they're at, like, an event or something and someone isn't ready for the help. And she's like, this is awful. Like, they have to. They have to be. And Juliana's like, we can't force people into this. Like, if they want to, yeah, oh my God, amazing, wonderful. But we can't force people to be ready. And this is like, this is it. Teal gets pissed. She's not okay anymore. Now they've crossed a line.
Okay.
And it's like, oh, so just people can't have differing opinions.
Correct.
Or undermine you.
Very interesting that Juliana shows up and she's like, I will drink this Kool-Aid.
Yes.
Like, I am now, well, I officially subscribe to this ideology now, too.
But imagine with me, right? And Juliana and Blake are still married. And it seems happily. So imagine with me, you meet the love of your life and they're involved in a group that seems at face value with everything online, very healthy, very wellness forward, very like this person has something that can help.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what they've dedicated their life doing. So you're like, I want to support them. I love them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get into it. And she says in it, it's this very interesting visual of her just being like, this is not what I thought it was going to be. This really is not what I thought it was going to be. And sort of that rupture. But something that was very funny is Molly, the private investigator, is talking to Blake at one point after they get married. And it's the two of them in the shot. And she goes, do you guys want kids? And he's like, no, I feel like I kind of did that with Winter already. And she's like, not right now, but like, it is a wish. And he kind of has this like, oh shit, look on his face. And she just goes, you guys should talk about that sometime.
Just going to come, stir the pot, and fucking right? leave. Bye.
But anyway, I don't know if it's a cult. Bye. Anyway, so Molly, yes, she's the private investigator that was hired by the Teal tribe. I don't know if it was Teal specifically, but at least by her inner circle. So I'm assuming she's behind it.
Excellent.
To investigate whether or not this was a cult. And Molly spoke with Jared, who we talked about last week on the Mormon Stories podcast. And Molly spoke with other members that were previously involved or were currently involved, people on the outskirts, people in the inner circle, but
she did her homework.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't really until she was talking to Jared and the inner circle and the current inner circle, because he wasn't in it at that time, that the red flags really started popping up. And this was not a more flags, more fun situation.
Mm.
Very not Six Flags-esque of them. But she says she needs to understand like the core of this group a little better. And it has been very interesting to see Molly's reactions to the way people are like, no, it's like a really big deal that everybody gets along and gets along with Teal and like mm-hmm. all of these things. And I don't like this, but Teal tends to treat Blake kind of like a puppy dog that will just come running whenever she wants.
Well, if he always has.
Exactly. And so it's just curious how Teal creates a lot of doubt about Juliana and Blake, but they get through it. Eventually,
Teal's just meddling.
Right. Eventually, actually, he leaves with Juliana. And they go back to her home country, which is wild.
I bet Teal just like went around to him and was like, you know what? Good on you for staying with her through all that. And he's like, what? What do you mean? She's like, just good. Good for you tolerating it, you know?
Yeah. Probably.
And walks away.
You're a stronger man than me.
Yeah, you're stronger than I thought you were. That's good.
That's good.
Interesting.
Yeah. But they are a very sweet couple. I actually am rooting for them in so many ways. They're really sweet.
Well, they escaped. That's something.
They did. Say. And can you imagine being the one that's like, yeah, I moved across like the globe to go be with my husband and his
cult
19-year ex-girlfriend and their alleged cult. And then I got him to move away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They seem happily married still. There's not much about them online. I'd like to give them the next chapter of their life with well wishes and not digging too far into that.
Mm.
I just know they're still together because my people on Reddit, they know what's up.
Yes, Redditors.
And that's also linked in the links. So don't worry, you can see it too. But it's very interesting. And there's an array of other scenes, including a man telling Teal that he was hesitant to take information from her since she doesn't look up to anyone. I think we sort of briefly talked about this, but mm-hmm. where she was like, she lays into the sky in front of the entire group while they're sitting there. And it seems like it could be the beginning of a retreat, but maybe it was further into it. I don't know. But he's basically saying, like, who do you look up to? And she gets pissed. I mean, she visually looks so angry. She doesn't sound it. She's got a very controlled voice. That's part of her thing. But her face clenches. You can see her little, like, jaw in her temples pop out. And, like, her eyebrow cocks. And she just kind of gets this, like, fucking try me vibe.
Mm.
But she's like, that's like saying that if you're in the Olympics or you're trying out for the Olympics, that the world's fastest runner has nothing to teach you because there's nobody faster than them. Like, no one is a higher authority than me on this.
Oh, my.
And it was funny because I think it was the Scamfluencers podcast, but they were like, yeah, the world's fastest runner still probably has people they look up to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't have to be like this one thing. You have to be better at me for me to be inspired by you.
Yep.
Very interesting. A little bit narcissistic, IMO. But there's also this other scene where a woman questions Teal. She like comes into the retreat and she's like, I'm back again because my life is fucking shit since I was here last time.
Mm.
Paraphrased.
Correct.
And later in that episode, it cuts to this scene where the woman is like kind of being waterboarded.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, it's like a big pool. And for those of you who are hashtag raised religious, you'll know what I mean. It's like a baptism pool kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And Teal's in it. And it's cuts that you can't see Teal doing it. It is edited to seem like it's Teal doing it, but I won't confirm because you don't know. Of this woman being like pushed into the water, left there for a while, let up so she can take a breath, and then shoved right back in for like quite a few times.
Like her head underwater? Yes. Okay. Yeah. Is she fighting it?
Not in the fact that she like signed up for that as a quote unquote therapy, which just a spoiler, it's not. But yes, in that like your body will fight trying right. to be drowned.
Yep. But she's not like someone kidnapped her and she's
no.
But yeah,
no, like it's not like a mob scene where like,
well, that's what I'm like behind. Picturing. So this is consensual.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because this is one of the therapies.
I'm and sick her life that day.
Has been like awful since she went last time. So why wouldn't she try the next one?
I have a thing that day. I can't make it to that one.
So sorry. What session is that? Mm-hmm. I am out.
No, but I'm busy. Thank you, though.
When she finally gets let up, her and Teal exchange like, I love you.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely sick that day. Like, woo, my stomach.
I'm so sorry. I have such an avoidant attachment style. You want me to say I love you after like a week?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-mm.
Uh-uh.
That's just clingy to me. I'm going to need you to not do that.
I'm going
to
yeet. Okay. But then there's also these other scenes where like Grassi is telling her story and she's getting some kind of chakra or energy esque acupuncture kind of thing.
Mm.
Once again, my chakra vocabulary is limited. However, it does seem like Teal's lighting something on fire and lightly putting it out on Grassi's leg. Mm-hmm. But she also fed her, this is where the fucking frog poison came in, fed her frog poison for some alleged beneficial reason.
Now, is this poison from a poisonous frog or is this poison that is poisonous to frogs?
No, I believe it's something from a frog that is poisonous.
Gotcha.
Yes. What that is? No, I don't know.
All right.
I wasn't in the room where it happened, but
I feel like the answer's obvious, but I gotta ask.
Yeah, I get that.
Because of, you know, the last couple episodes of it all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all wonkier than the last piece.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's all still wonky.
Mm-hmm.
So Grassi's like projectile-y throwing up.
As you would, yep.
From the frog poison, you know? And I want to mention, though, that there was one article. And since 2022, when the documentary came out, all I can find is the one without a specified author. But it is out there from LA Wire that has claimed it was fake and unethical writing or like editing in this documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And what they say is a few things, but one call out is for a list of non-negotiables that include a significant amount of violating rules for people who want to be like close with Teal is how it's portrayed.
Okay.
The documentary portrayed this as a list for her like entire inner circle, but the Wire article says that it was a drafted brainstorming session for people that could move into Teal's house. They also seemed to believe that a cult meant everybody had to cohabitate, and they were like, Teal only lives with her son, so haha. And I'm like, that's not how that works, but okay. Anyway.
It's not geographical.
No, not typically. I also don't know the truth, but I know if it was her inner circle that was drafting it, they're still convinced that they have to make her happy and that anything she says is right. So there's not a lot of actual free will in that if they're drafting this list that's like, you can't ever travel to see family, like you can't have significant others that don't get along with me or aren't approved, or like things like this that are wild. However, due to the controversy, I will just suggest that you watch the documentary and decide for yourself. I take the article with a really big grain of salt because they also attack the producer for having a hypocritical view of the way that Teal's workers are treated versus his, where his also had long days, late nights, and a high demand, but they were also filming an entire documentary within a few years, and then they get the rest of that time off.
Mm-hmm.
Which is usually part of a work contract, but that's beside the point. Also, it did say that most of what was on the list was legal, that non-negotiable list, despite the fact that in the docuseries, the private investigator initially said that she believed most of it was illegal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Granted, I'm not well-versed in Puerto Rico's laws, so I feel like I'm a bad authority on that. But just so you guys know. I also have a hard time believing it since it has a lot of claims with no evidence, no named sources, and seemingly a pro-Teal bias, which is fine, just notable. And it claims that there is a long list of things that were unethical, but it does really only call out a few examples, and then they say it's non-exhaustive. So personally, I think if you were that passionate about it, and that there's a long list of things that made this unethical, I would list more than like 2 to 4 examples.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm not them. I'm not them. I feel so poorly for Teal's inner circle. And of course, would not consider anyone who follows or followed her to be flawed, not okay, wrong, or broken, or anything like that. I think that's the hardest part of this situation. I think she struggles and at least to some degree believes what she says. And I think her followers are learning language for how they feel. And then they're feeling free and validated from that. But they aren't recognizing that they're not getting better. Their vocabulary is just getting bigger. And I think people are suffering. And I think Teal wants to help. But the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and I don't know what comes after this or how we're judged or if we are, but I can tell you in my soul that there is a compass that tells me it's not okay to cause suffering knowingly or negligently to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
These people just need love and help and support, and to not be ostracized or criticized for doing something to find their path back to happiness. Just because they stumbled and found a teal swan road doesn't mean they're not still actively searching for a good road, or that they should be shunned because they went down the wrong path.
Mm-hmm.
Or a different path. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Something that I want to like really highlight here is when we talked about Jared last week. Jared went to her while he was suicidal. He was actively suicidal. He almost overdosed, and it was due to a really great church employee that he, or worker, I don't know if they were volunteer, but like a church related figure that helped him take the medication away so that he could not do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he found Teal in the aftermath of that. And then when he left, she told him directly that he should just go kill himself.
That is horrible.
This is not okay. And it's not healing or good.
So he leaves one group, the Mormon church, searching for something fulfilling to give his life to and searching for answers, finds her, thinks that's it. He pretty much goes on death's doorstep, and then she's like, you know, if you change your mind at all, you can just die.
Pretty much. He's like, he gets out of the church. He's like, wow, I'm pretty suicidal, huh? I need something. Finds her. Is like, hey, I'm pretty suicidal, huh? I need something. And she's like, let me heal your chakra on this weird sexy bed thing. And then he gets sucked in. They live together with her ex-husband, Blake, and her son. And then they're there for a while. Jared provides a lot of money and support. And then they break up. And then he leaves. And she's like, yeah, go kill yourself.
That's mature. That's also good.
Not for nothing. And no offense, Jared. I have a lot of respect for you. She did make him get like a tattoo on his palm that said, is it true?
What?
Because he was apparently lying to her. And from my recollection, I don't think he believed he was lying to her, but she knew he was lying to her because she could read his mind.
Right. Every thought been thought.
So he has to tattoo on his palm, is it true?
I would have started with a keychain first, personally, and then maybe worked my way up. If
a WWTD?
Yeah, if that weren't enough, but okay. All right.
I'm sorry, Professor. I must not tell lies.
Different strokes for different bitch. Folks, I guess.
But I just want that to settle in. Like, this is someone that came to her with a concern that she claimed she would help heal. Instead, became romantically involved with, and then when that didn't work out, encouraged him to do the exact thing he came to her not to do.
It was the hardest way she could hurt him.
And she had absolutely no hesitation to do it.
Mm-mm.
And I think it's important to note here that, like, in the grand scheme, he's not special. There's nothing about him that makes him different from her other followers. And her whole statement this whole time is that what she's been through, who she is, what she knows, that she knows she has a desperate population of vulnerable people makes her safe because of her ethics. And if her ethics are the kind of ethics that allow someone to come to you for help that you then, for a selfish reason, get romantically entangled with to then tell them to go fucking kill themselves, those are not ethics I want to be involved in. And this is why there's a fucking board for licensed professionals.
Preach it, sister.
Also, sorry, I'm just mad now. She did get fined by Utah $500 for practicing therapy, and that's it.
That's a write-off.
She got fined.
Are you kidding me?
$500 for doing trauma work with people that she is not licensed or certified to do.
It's not even enough to get your own room, damn it.
No! That's a tenth of one person going to her retreat in Puerto Rico. You think she gives a shit?
You hate to see it.
But anyway, Now that we've talked about some concerning things, and I do want you all, please go watch that. There are so many fucked up things in there. I don't even have the wherewithal to make sense in one cohesive episode here.
I don't want
to
watch it if I can't watch it with you. The feedback is what I need.
If you guys are interested, we have considered doing like a Patreon where we do watch parties that you guys could join, or like watch us watch things together, whatever sounds fun. But let us know, because that sounds fun.
Sounds like we could have a good time. I'm just saying.
But anyway, I do want to move on to, is it a cult? Because we're already over an hour and we do still have another part of this.
Let's do it.
So I took a few signs that something is a cult from a place called Cult Education. They're actually a really great resource for all kinds of different culty things. But I think this would be just an interesting list to go over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go over the list. We're going to talk about whether or not there are some examples, a really quick tie up. And then next week, we're going to get into our final determination, what Molly, the private investigator, said, and where Teal is now.
All right.
Okay. So with my big concerns out there, here are 10 red flags that a cult is a cult. Is a cult is a cult. Is a horse, of course.
Of course.
First, absolute authoritarianism without meaningful accountability. Second, no tolerance for questions or critical inquiry. The third is no meaningful financial disclosure regarding budget and expenses, such as independently audited financial statements. The fourth is unreasonable fear about the outside world, such as impending catastrophe, evil conspiracies, and persecutions. The fifth is that there is no legitimate reason to leave. Former followers are always wrong in leaving, negative or even evil. The sixth is that former members often relate the same stories or abuse and reflect a similar pattern in grievances.
Mm.
The seventh is that there are records, books, news articles, or television programs that document the abuses of the cult group or leader. The eighth is that followers feel like they can never be quote unquote good enough. The ninth is that the group or leader is always right. And the tenth is that the group or leader is the exclusive means of knowing truth or receiving validation, and no other process of discovery is really acceptable or credible. I think there are plenty of examples for each.
I ain't saying shit about shit.
But let's keep it brief.
Uh-huh.
So for the first point, and again, I'd like to once again, very highly, very loudly, very boldly in red letters, if we can do that in audio, I don't know. I'd like to put all of this out here flashing in your face as big as it can get, allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, IMO, IMHO, TBH. Okay? Okay. So for the first point. Absolute authoritarianism without accountability is my personal biggest red flag in Teal. She told the guy in her retreat straight up there was no bigger authority than her on this. In her comparison to a runner, she was the fastest runner. And when people hurt themselves, she said there was nothing anyone could have done to help them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'd say almost verbatim, this is absolute authority without accountability.
Because mm-hmm.
when something goes right, it's on her. But when it gets wrong, it's on you.
Mm-hmm.
The second point is that there is no tolerance for questions or critical inquiry. And while this is more of a nonverbal thing that Teal does, there are still examples. The same guy actually in the retreat said something about having a hard time trusting her when she doesn't look up to someone. And she looks visibly agitated, like we talked about. The muscles clench, her face and jaw tightens, her eyebrows raise. And it's almost like, try me. And then she continues to blame his insecurities or misogyny on why he doesn't believe her.
No, that's Teal. Come on, girl.
There's no tolerance. And then if we want to look at Juliana, and again, I said I'd keep it brief, but I'm going tangential here. If we want to look at Juliana for saying she cannot force someone into believing what she's spreading, Teal then decides Juliana's an enemy.
She said, Juliana, you got to go swimming, girl.
She said,
you got some breathing exercises to work on.
None, yeah. Yeah, literally. So the third is no meaningful financial disclosure. This one isn't as prevalent, in all honesty, but can be seen in her inner circle with Jared when he was getting jobs just to pay for the house and everyone's things so that she could keep growing her business. Again, not as big of a one, but I want to note it.
That, I think, the financial piece does not seem to be what she's... Because I don't think that she needs them for the financial piece. Like, so many other cults, like, they're not on fucking YouTube. They're not getting... Right. money from outside things like that. It's you're fully relying on the people that you're bringing in. Doesn't seem like she's doing that. So I mean, I don't know. I see that piece as not being relevant to her.
Yeah. And I think Jared is the only thing that's closest that I yeah. could find. But I will also say, once again, knowing that she is completely unqualified in any sense of Western psychology to be working with people's trauma and brains.
And accepting money for it.
$5,000 a piece. Okay, fine. $4,200 a piece.
I'm an only child. I'm getting my own room.
I know you are.
If we're not bunkies, then nobody is.
But like, she does not probably need people to be coming to her with money if she has income from streaming, content creating, and retreats.
Yes.
And that's not to mention any of her chakra things that she does outside of that, or her events or her books.
And also she had Blake to like have his house.
Literally. Actually, just, I don't know whose house it was. I'm not going to say that, but. But.
I have a guess.
So fourth is the unreasonable fear about the outside world, such as impending catastrophe, evil conspiracies and persecutions. And once again, I'm just going to say Juliana. Like, I don't feel like I need to say more than that, but if she's scary because she's an unknown and we can't just let anybody near me, and then she disagrees with you, so she's crossed a line and they're enemies. And even just the fact that if you go on her fucking YouTube, she's like, people don't understand this and so they're going to persecute it. I understand it. I'm still doing it.
She doesn't seem to be going after the whole, like, the world will end if we don't do this. Like, remember Mother God?
Yeah.
When you covered her?
Robin Williams, rest in power, King.
Yeah, like, there was a lot of that, like, she wasn't claiming that she was the all-knowing, but, like, she was the vessel that the all-knowing would speak through.
Right.
And, you know, aliens were going to come down, whatever it was.
Oh, yeah, the spaceship clouds. Yeah. Cute.
But... Teal isn't saying do this or like you won't survive the apocalypse. So I can understand like she's not doing it on this big global weather on this. She's not doing it on this global like level.
Not, yeah, it's not an impending catastrophe, but I will say it is constant reminders that it's an us versus them. We are the good. And people from the outside are going to ridicule or persecute because they don't get it.
Well, and it's an us versus them, and it's also you versus you. Like, you yeah. versus yourself. And who's going to win?
Yep.
Hashtag, is it true?
One that feels iffy in this is number five, that there is no legitimate reason to leave, and that former followers are always wrong in leaving, negative, or even evil. This isn't necessarily correct verbatim, but Teal's version doesn't feel a lot different. Again, we'll talk about Jared. When he left, she's of course telling him to go kill himself, which is obviously not okay. But again, really not okay for someone who deals with mental health who already came to you for suicidality
mm-hmm.
in general. But because of this, it gets to the point, and I'll even talk about Blake too. When Blake leaves, Teal has this moment where she's like, everything's a lie. It's like you build all these things up and they're not even true. And like, he's awful, and now I'm so hurt. And it's not about what happened that pushed these people to leave. So it's not quite like they left so they are evil. It's like, I'm already so hurt. I've already been through so much. You're doing this to me. You're going to make me hurt more. And because of that trauma piece, then anybody who leaves is wrong because they're harming her.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it, but I don't, she gets a pass on this part from me, like from me.
I would say what's difficult about this is that I think a lot of the iffiness comes from the duality of it. Because it's not just I'm all knowing and I have access to this. It's I'm all knowing and I'm the most traumatized. And the two of them together make me feel like a lot of these are completed.
Yeah, because you can come at it from both sides.
Right. Because if it was individually, I completely agree. But with both of them, because I know everything, you're not smarter than me. But because I'm so hurt, if you do anything to hurt me, then you're evil because you're hurting the most hurt person alive. And how could you do that?
It's almost like it's a lose-lose situation.
Almost. Unless you're her.
Well,
then it's a win-lose?
Is she winning, though? I don't know.
I don't want whatever the prize is that she's winning, but...
I have a lot of thoughts.
But the sixth... is former members often relate the same stories of abuse and reflect a similar pattern of grievances.
Yeah.
Check. Must we say more? Oh, okay. Well, this one feels difficult to prove, but the fact that everybody walks away with memories of like new sexual abuse or familial sexual abuse or satanic cult rituals or watching other kids get murdered or watching other kids get grilled or any of those.
Believing that. Like that's some shared trauma that they're leaving with.
And also that none of this was in their brain before they left.
But they're not saying I got there and Teal abused me.
No. No.
Which is probably what that's referring to. It's like they left and they had all of these similar...
Yeah, like DOS.
Yeah, like...
In the Nexium series.
Exactly. Like we all went through this thing or this is what I was subjected to. Yeah.
It's not that. It's just we all walked away with quote unquote recovered memories of traumatic, satanic, ritualistic or sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So do with that as you will.
Mm-hmm.
The seventh is that there are records, books, news articles, or television programs that document the abuses of the group or leader. Well, check out our linked sources.
Mm-hmm.
I got all of it from somewhere.
Enough said.
Oh, I also want to say I didn't use this one, but there is another called Open Shadow, the story of Teal Swan.
Hmm.
I just haven't seen it yet. If you look at the list, I think you'll know that like I've spent a lot of time on it. So it was really more of like a time restraint than me not wanting to watch it.
Right.
I'll probably watch it at some point.
Sounds like a date.
But just so you know, there's another one in there. Okay. You can look at that too. But yeah, so we have all of those and then more for number seven. But for the eighth, followers feel like they can never be quote unquote good enough is one I see in her claims of authority due to her extrasensory abilities. The extrasensory abilities themselves are their own can of worms, but it's because of those that she is superior and these abilities aren't something you can like really achieve or learn or grow into.
Mm.
So you quite literally can never be on the same level. Like there's no good enough to be as good.
No.
And you can't achieve it.
And she'd likely feel very threatened if anybody ever got close. Mm-hmm. So probably wouldn't work out well for you anyway.
The ninth is that the group or the leader is always right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's been through significant trauma and has gone through it and has extrasensory abilities, access to the Akashic records, and so she knows everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, tattoo on your hand, is it true? Because you're lying to me. I know that. You don't. But I do.
You know, it's like if somebody is talking to you and they stare at the center of your forehead and you're like, I know nothing's on my forehead, but... You seem to really think there is that part of me wants to go look in a mirror and make sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that.
Or like when someone wipes the corner of their mouth and you're like, was that for you or for me? And then you start like wiping. You're like,
or if they do it twice and they're still looking at you and I'm like, just say it.
I know.
Just embarrass me. Say it.
Damn it. And lastly, the 10th. The group or leader is the exclusive means of knowing the truth or receiving validation. And no other process of discovery is really acceptable or credible. How can you argue with an alien who has access to every thought ever thought in the history of time?
You just can't, man. It is what it is. Accept defeat.
Well, guess she's always right, and she's the only way to know.
Oh, hell.
Oh, hell. So by my count, 6 out of 10 of them, for me, felt like an absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
3 out of 10 are maybe... Probable. We could find ways, but maybe not all the time. Mm-hmm. And 1 out of 10, I could only find one example of. So
I don't remember my personal count.
I don't know what odds that makes this to be a cult, but I will say if the majority of the group were either a yes or absolutely, and that is 9 out of 10 or 90% or an A-, if you will, I would say I'd be concerned.
Yeah. No, we're going to unpack it all next week.
A whole hell of a lot of it next week. So do some homework. Watch some shit. Read some shit. Join us for the combo.
Have so much fun. Yeah. If you have any questions.
Yes. Oh my God. Send in questions. Send in your thoughts. Maybe we can do like a little listener part of like,
do y'all
think this is a cult?
I would love to do that. Please.
That would be really, really fun and we would love it. So put that in the Q&A below. I'm also going to put a poll down below on Spotify. Let us know your thoughts. Do you see examples of the 10 different warning signs it's a cult? Have you watched the documentary yet? I'm begging you. Oh, I'm begging you.
Please. Yeah, guys, let us know. We'd like to incorporate as much as we can of what you guys think.
Absolutely.
So when you hear this episode, let us know.
And again, please just like, do a basic Google search on the people you're going to go to and trust your trauma and your mental health and yourself with. Mm-hmm. Look at those linked sources and resources below. We do have some resources for different hotlines and for people who might have struggled listening to some of this. And always, you can see the people, the places, the things on our Instagram, including a little snippet of that fine that Teal got.
Ooh.
On our Instagram, and you can find that as well as our email to email us any questions, thoughts, concerns, feelings, general vibes, your experience with Teal, how long it took you and her videos to get to something that you were like, that seems weird. Do you believe that she's an alien? Do you believe she has access to these things? Let us know. Email us. You can find all of that down below in our link tree with links to our PayPal and Venmo and Redbubble if you wanted like a little sticker or something like that for your water bottle or any of the other cool things, which I found out we can make a fucking clock on once again, and it could literally be about time for true crime all the time.
Yeah.
Which is fun and cool. And there's little cats. But anyway, you all know that. So you can check that out in the meantime. Watch that documentary. But if I do look at my watch, that was...
About time for true crime.
Bye.
Bye, love you.